inescapable shock. Preoccupied with so many lingering questions about traumatic stress, I became intrigued with the idea that the nascent field of neuroscience could provide some answers, and started to attend the meetings of the American College of Neuropsychopharmacology, the ACNP. In 1984, the ACNP offered many fascinating lectures about drug development, but it was not until a few hours before my scheduled flight back to Boston that I heard a presentation by Stephen Meyer of the University of Colorado, who had collaborated with Martin Seligman of the University of Pennsylvania. His topic was learned helplessness in animals. Meyer and Seligman had repeatedly administered painful electric shocks to dogs who were trapped in locked cages. They called this condition inescapable shock. Being a dog lover, I realized that I could never have done such research myself, but I was curious about how this cruelty would affect the animals. After administering several courses of electric shock, the researchers opened the doors of the cages and then shocked the dogs again. A group of control dogs who had never been shocked before immediately ran away. But the dogs, who had earlier been subjected to inescapable shock, made no attempt to flee, even when the door was wide open. They just lay there, whimpering and defecating. The mere opportunity to escape does not necessarily make traumatized animals or people take the road to freedom. Like Meyer and Seligman's dogs, many traumatized people simply give up. Rather than risk experimenting with new options, they stay stuck in the fear they know. I was riveted by Meyer's account. What they had done to these poor dogs was exactly what had happened to my traumatized human patients. They too had been exposed to somebody or something who had inflicted terrible harm on them, harm they had no way of escaping. I made a rapid mental review of the patients I had treated. Almost all had in some way been trapped or immobilized, unable to take action to stave off the inevitable. Their fight-flight response had been thwarted, and the result was either extreme agitation or collapse. Meyer and Seligman also found that traumatized dogs secrete much larger amounts of stress hormones than was normal. This supported what we were beginning to learn about the biological underpinnings of traumatic stress. A group of young researchers, among them Stephen Southwick and John Crystal at Yale, Ari Shalev at Hadassah Medical School in Jerusalem, Frank Putnam at the National Institute of Mental Health, the NIMH, and Roger Pittman, later at Harvard, were all finding that traumatized people keep secreting large amounts of stress hormones long after the actual danger has passed. And Rachel Yehuda at Mount Sinai in New York confronted us with her seemingly paradoxical findings that the levels of the stress hormone cortisol are low in PTSD. Her discoveries only started to make sense when her research clarified that cortisol puts an end to the stress response by sending an all-safe signal, and that in PTSD, the body's stress hormones do, in fact, not return to baseline after the threat has passed.